Gardner concludes a trilogy in which the protagonists have gotten increasingly unsympathetic and decreasingly redeemable. Yet the sly, subversive Schrader also made this third piece the most hopeful. That's from Adam Kempner of Film Spotting. A terrific blurb talking about Master Gardner. That's our featured review this week here on Cinephile, the new film written and directed by Paul Schrader, that legendary filmmaker. It stars Joel Edgerton and Sigourney Weaver, among others. Our old movie, in honor of Chris Cody's birthday, which just took place on Saturday, I said, you pick the movie, and just to help you out, I've never seen any of these Adam Sandler movies. He goes, bam, Billy Madison, we're doing it. So I got my review. I watched that this morning. And as far as our wild card is concerned, Anthony Ramos. Cannot wait. This guy was terrific. And in The Heights, he's a huge Mets fan. I believe he's a Jets fan as well. He's in the new Transformers movie. Now, not crazy about the fact they didn't send me the link, but they said this is the only time he's available. I said, okay, sure. I'll review Transformers later on. But I really look forward to talking to Anthony because he's obviously a very talented actor and a sports guy as well. So
Hamilton.
Yeah, exactly. Talk about Hamilton with him. It's going to be amazing. Broadway.
Although we had him on during the Super Bowl, and he didn't love Hamilton questions. You could kind of see it in his face. Maybe I'm reading the room wrong, but he saw in his face, like, I'm kind of tired of talking about Hamilton.
No, that's a good heads up by you. I'll ask him one and done, and that's it. We won't go into detail. If he's not crazy about it, that's totally fine. From what I saw, he was on the Rich Eisen show. He's a big sports guy, so if he should be wanting to talk Edgardo Alfonso and Al Leiter,
yes.
unless I misread this article about him. We'll ask him Aaron Rodgers, all that stuff.
Yes.
Again, a great happy birthday to Chris Cody. How was the birthday?
Excellent, man. It's just as we get older, you know, just relax a little bit. Nothing too crazy. Just enjoying some time with the family. But honestly, it was good.
Good.
Not a very noteworthy birthday, 36. So, but I feel fine, man. It's good to be alive.
That's what it ends up being, right? Just like, yeah, I'm just happy to be alive. That's it.
Yeah.
Milestone, you're getting closer to 40, and that's a birthday nobody really wants to celebrate. So 36 is a good birthday to celebrate.
I'm just not young anymore. Like, that's just, I know I'm not that old. I'm prepared to say not that old, but there's just no way I can spin any type of I'm young.
No, but you're right. Mid-30s still sounds, so the average person, how old are you? Mid-30s, that's pretty good. 40 and above, it's terrible. Like, nobody ever feels good about 40 and above. But 36, like, that's good. And you look a couple years younger, you have a great job, good money, got a daughter, you know, happy, healthy wife.
We're out here, man.
Plus, you're still consistent in ignoring my text. I texted you happy birthday, couldn't even give it a like.
I didn't respond to that?
No, I get awful. I got, it's your birthday. I'm just saying, you don't need to respond, just give it a like. Nothing. Give it a heart.
Give it an exclamation point.
Yeah.
I think the like is just like, that's just patronizing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'd rather have a no response than just a thumbs up. Like, you're a big emoji guy on the texts.
No, I'm not an emoji guy. I like the likes. I like the double.
Well, that is an emoji. I consider that an emoji.
Emoji, like, is like the smiley face and like fist pumps and all that.
It's the thumb emoji. It's the haha. Like, I still think those are emojis. Maybe not.
No,
we're getting.
We can discuss. I like the double tap. I'm a huge double tap guy. You're right on that. Likes, that's exclamation points, hearts, question marks. I'll take all those.
That's a new thing, though. Like, it's not like you've done this your whole life. At some point, you were like, this is a new thing, and I like it. I'm going to do this.
I like the double tap. I don't like the. I'm not a crazy emoji guy. I've never sent you like a smiley face with shades on it. I've never. That to me is an emoji.
That's when you're at the beach, like beach day, and then you send me that thing underneath it.
Regardless, you still ignored me, but I knew you were busy. So maybe, you know, on your birthday, you're allowed to do whatever you want.
Hundreds of texts are flooding in. I'm very popular, so it's just
hard.
Well,
I realize, like, if I message you on Instagram, I'd have a better chance of getting a response. Or if I tweeted you, maybe I'd have a better chance of responding to you. Maybe you're on social media, but regardless.
I'm sorry. I'm bad about it. I actually got roasted on my dad's podcast. Like, my Yeti Blanc, our producer, put together a whole roast. We had, like, Brad Williams, the comedian, Sarah Spain, Izzy Gutierrez, Billy Roy. Like, it was like a bunch of random people for my roast, and they roasted me.
Wow.
They roasted me pretty hard.
You weren't expecting a roast.
No.
Wow. I like a good roast if I know I'm going. If I don't know I'm getting roasted, that's like, that's a barrage. That's
it was very jarring. I got on at 10:30 on 10:30 on Friday. I just zoomed, like, you know, let me just have a Zoom with my dad and Yeti, and all of a sudden there's 15 people staring at me.
No, dude, that's not fair. I don't like a sneak attack. I love a good roast. By the way, my buddy Scott Spinelli was showing me. We love the Comedy Central roasts, which
love
you and I do too. You and I have talked about before. He was showing me one. I forgot this. Jeff Ross with some of the fact that nobody was making fun of B. Arthur. So, like, part of the joke is you got to take shots at other people on the dais. So Sandra Bernhardt at some point started doing like a dance, and Jeff Ross goes, I wouldn't fuck Sandra Bernhardt with B. Arthur's dick. And you see the B. Arthur reacts like that. I'm like, no, dude, you're going to take shots at other people. That's just how it works. The roasts are so great. And again, congrats to Chris right now of South Florida, the epicenter of sports. I've stopped watching. It's not even competitive. Like, who cares? The Heat are going to sweep the Celtics. Panthers are going to win in 4 or 5. Like, it's unbelievable. You have two of your teams right now in the championship. It's incredible. Good for you guys.
It's awesome. Wild.
It is a wild time to be a sports fan. It's also wild. I wish I was at the Palme d'Or right now. I wish I was at the Cannes Film Festival because my main man, like Ahmad Rashad used to say, my main man, Martin Scorsese's new film, Killers of the Flower Moon, debuted at the Cannes Film Festival. And as I said to you all last week, I've read the books. I know what it's about. So I wasn't scared reading some reviews. But if you don't know the story, I would suggest you probably not read too many reviews. By the way, in case you're wondering, no surprise, the reviews have been outstanding. I read the IndieWire review from David Ehrlich. He called it the best performance of Leonardo DiCaprio's career. He said De Niro is excellent. He did say it's very long, 3.5-hour runtime, just like The Irishman. He said it's a little bit tedious towards the end, but he said it's an excellent film. And I saw immediately people were sending me this stuff about the fact it got a 9-minute standing ovation. As Cody remembers, Blonde, which neither he or I liked, got, I believe you can look this up, a 14-minute standing ovation at the Cannes Film Festival. So don't tell me, hey, Scorsese's new movie is good because it got a 9-minute standing ovation. No. That to me dissuades me because those standing ovations mean nothing to me.
Well, Brendan Fraser got a long one, though, if I remember correctly.
He did, for The Whale, but that was, I believe, the Venice Film Festival. I mean, the Cannes Film Festival,
different.
I believe Blonde. Yeah, Blonde got like
Are these different ovations?
Ovation.
Are these different ovations?
Yeah, absolutely. Different places. If I tell you in Miami, got a 5-minute ovation, and Utah got a 12-minute ovation. Like, well, hang on a second. Miami and Utah are not the same thing. So look up The Whale. Brendan Fraser was at the Venice Film Festival, I believe. He got a standing ovation. At the Cannes Film Festival was Blonde, got like a 14-minute ovation. I go, you know what? I'm not taking any sort of stock in the length of the standing ovation. What I'm telling you is it's a new Martin Scorsese film. It's his 10th film with Robert De Niro. It's his 6th film with Leonardo DiCaprio. It's the first time the three of them are together. It's 3.5 hours about the murder of the Osage Indians. I've read the book. I know it's going to be incredible. I don't need the ovation from Cannes to convince me of that. But bottom line is this. The movie debuted at the Cannes Film Festival. Again, you can check out reviews right now. The movie opens in October here stateside, and then it's going to be available on Apple Plus. Basically, Marty had a deal with Paramount. Paramount goes, this is too much money. But like, what the hell? You're 80 years old. You need $200 million to make a movie? He's like, yeah. I just did The Irishman for like $150 million on Netflix. Okay, fine. Well, screw you. No, really? Apple will do it. So they worked at a deal because, of course, Marty has to have his movies in theaters. He's just such a purist about it. So Paramount will release the movie in theaters so we can all go and see a new Leonardo DiCaprio movie. And then if you want to just wait till streaming, you have that option as well. This is the way of the future now. You're going to see films like Air was in theaters for a month, boom, on Amazon Prime a month later. Killers of the Flower Moon, Scorsese, Marty, Leo, DiCaprio, Robert De Niro in theaters for 1 month only, then it'll be on streaming. So that's going to be the way of the future.
Do you think that they're going to at some point move away from, I mean, obviously they're always going to track dollars, but like they're going to quantify the X amount of people tuned into Netflix to watch this movie. Like, you know, they don't send it, like you see what's most popular on these streaming, but they don't give you point blank. This is how many people watch this movie this weekend and monetizing that.
Like no, you're 100%
right. That's the shift, right?
You're 100% right. And that's one of the frustrations people have with Netflix. Spielberg said, so if I release The Fablemans and it doesn't do well financially, everyone can roast me for it. But Netflix, you have no idea. They just say it was the most streamed minutes globally. We set new records for downloads. But what's the actual numbers?
Yeah.
So when they spent $200 million in The Irishman, well, did you make $200 million in subscribers from The Irishman? Like, probably not. But Netflix won't tell us. So it's always very unfair to the studios. Universal, Warner Brothers, okay, you know, our film Amsterdam cost $70 million and it grossed $5.6 million. Yeah, it's a huge turkey. With Netflix, you have no idea because they don't really know the quantification of those numbers. But
what's the value of being Netflix's number one streamed movie for 2 straight weeks? You know what I mean? Like, is that worth as much as X amount of millions of dollars grossed at the box office?
Yeah. They were saying with The Irishman, they go, honestly, just the cash of saying we have a Martin Scorsese movie, that's worth whatever it costs. Like, Reed Hastings was like, the CEO was like, I don't care. Like, well, we'll pay $300 million. Like, whatever. We have Scorsese, De Niro, Pacino, Pesci. Okay. Great. By the way, The Irishman, which I love, we all know, 10 Oscar nominations, didn't win an Oscar. And I think if you ask the average person, if you ask the average Chris Cody, they'll go, it was kind of long. Like, you know, it's not like, my buddy Anthony Jimenez made a great point to me the other day. Me, him, and Rogowski at dinner, and he goes, how many times you watch Paris? He goes, you like Paris? And I go, of course, I love Paris. He goes, how many times you watch it? I go, once. He goes, how many times you see Goodfellas? I go, I don't know, 50 times. He goes, exactly. Back then, we used to rewatch movies all the time. Now, nobody rewatches movies. There's so much content, you're going to the next big thing. So how much value is it in any of these things because there's so much other stuff to watch? Like, I finally got caught up on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and I've said to you, that's a show I really like. I just haven't had time. There's too much crap on right now. So, like, the finale of Maisel is this Friday. Succession, the finale, is this coming Sunday. Barry, the finale, is Sunday. So next week, Cinephiles is going to be unbelievable. Or I'm going to review the new Robert De Niro film with Sebastian Maniscalco, and then I'm going to review arguably three of the best shows on TV. Succession, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and Barry, all concluding. Three shows all finishing up in the course of 3 days. But what will people do? Well, what else is on? Let's go find some channel streaming. Like, it's on to the next one. So away we go.
Dinner with Rags, huh?
Yeah, Rags was unbelievable. He was he was talking about the pod. He was like, dude, there's some big time guests you had recently. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, any sort of jump with the numbers? So I was like, I think you already know the answer to that question. He's like, I go, we have a steady, loyal niche following. He said, I just find the dynamic hilarious. Because I know Cody's a great guy, but he doesn't, he can't geek out like you. I said, yeah, but he's a great guy. I go, he's funny. He plays along. And I said, he keeps me in check for the first 10, 12 minutes. The stand-up, we just kind of screw around with our life stories. And then the movies, yeah. He kind of tunes out for a little bit. But then he comes back with the old movies. Right? Yeah. Because I go, honestly, if you're curious the genesis of this, I go, I remember Mike Ryan called me and just goes, hey, there's nobody's going to be at your level of movies, but here's your options. I think is how he phrased it. And he goes, it's going to be one of Chris, Billy, he may have said Roy. And I was like, any of those three are fine to me. He goes, do you have a preference? And I go, all three are great. But he goes, it's probably going to be Chris. And I go, great. Cody's a great guy. Done. He very easily could have said it's going to be Roy Bellamy. I'm like, okay, sure. And he could have said Billy. Rags is thinking I had some sort of investment. I go, listen, I really like Chris. He's a great guy. But it wasn't like they said, Cody's at the Virk level of movies. This will be a really good combination. That's not how it works.
Well, it was actually the opposite. It was let's make Adnan. Adnan's way up here. That's two. We got to bring this down. Who we got? Chris, get over here. Perfect.
Which is why, don't worry, we're going to get to Billy Madison in just a second.
First, though, he called the shit poop.
Let me talk Master Gardener. Let me geek out, as Rags would say, on Paul Schrader, one of my favorite filmmakers, the writer director. You know him, you love him. He wrote Taxi Driver. He co-wrote Raging Bull. He wrote and directed Autofocus, Affliction, American Gigolo, and most recently, First Reformed with Ethan Hawke and The Card Counter with Oscar Isaac. Fantastic podcast on Marc Maron, WTF, Hour 20 with Paul Schrader. The moment that Cody will like particularly. So Marc Maron's a pretty big Paul Schrader fan, so he's telling him, he's like, I had no idea I was going to get you on the pod, but coincidentally, the last year plus, I've rewatched a lot of your movies. I watched Light Sleeper, I watched Affliction, I watched Blue Collar, which is an old film with Richard Pryor, Yafikado. So Schrader's telling him stories about Richard Pryor, and he's like, how challenging it was to deal with, because obviously he was coked out of his mind, but incredibly talented. So at one point, Maron's like, what happened? He's like, you, Scorsese, De Palma, all you guys are just running things. And Schrader's like, well, cocaine. He's like, cocaine was a disaster. Marty ended up in the hospital, he was doing so much cocaine. And he's like, I just had to leave. He goes, so how did you quit cocaine? And Schrader goes, well, I left Los Angeles. He goes, you left the city. He's like, yeah, there's too much coke. He's like, where'd you go? He goes, I went to New York. He's like, what happened there? He's like, still too much cocaine. He goes, where'd you go? He goes, I went to Tokyo. He goes, so you got clean from cocaine in Tokyo? He goes, yeah. He goes, the drug of choice in Tokyo is speed. There's no cocaine there. You can't get cocaine in Japan, at least when Paul Schrader was there. He made the excellent film called Mishima back in 1985. But he's just such a smart guy. He knows so much about movies, and it's just fascinating, his upbringing, because as he has said, he grew up in a very religious upbringing. He goes, Scorsese was watching movies when he was 6 years old. He remembers westerns he saw. Steven Spielberg's remembering stuff he saw when he was 8. He goes, I had no movies. I never watched a movie until I was 18, 19 years old. I was such a strict religious upbringing. There was no movies allowed. So I don't have the reference points that those guys do. When I'm watching movies, imagine being introduced to movies for the first time when you're 18, 19, 20 years old. And the movies he was watching was European art films of the 70s. That's how Paul Schrader became a film critic. To me, that's incredible. Imagine you meet somebody who's a music critic. You go, you're a music critic? But I never listened to music until I was 19 years old. So you have no knowledge of music until you were 19. Yep, and I just started listening to the Rolling Stones. And that just informed my musical knowledge. I'm like, that's kind of interesting. So Schrader goes from being a film critic to an actual filmmaker because he writes Taxi Driver and the famous story. He gives it to Brian De Palma. De Palma goes, well, it's not right for me, but my buddy Marty would do wonders with this. He's like, really? Gives it to Scorsese and history is made. So his latest film is called Master Gardener. Here's a synopsis. A meticulous horticulturalist who is devoted to tending the grounds of a beautiful estate and pandering to his employer, the wealthy dowager, or is it dowager? I don't even know how to pronounce it. But think about this. Someone's telling me, Harold Reynolds Fry, what movie should I go see this weekend? He wants me to go say Fast X, right? The Fast and the Furious 10. And instead, I'm like, I'm going to go watch a movie about a horticulturalist. This is cinephile for you, folks. And as a matter of fact, I went Sunday night. My wife wasn't feeling well. I went to the AMC in West Nyack, New York, which is about 35 minutes away. It's the only place I can find that is playing independent films like this, like Master Gardener. $15.79 for the ticket, $6.12 for Twizzlers, $50 for the babysitter. So I paid, if I'm doing the math on this correctly, I paid $72 to go watch this movie last night. And by the way, I almost paid $4 for Billy Madison, and I was already enraged that I had to do this. I had to check every streaming service. I go, I'm not paying money for this. There's no way I'm going to like this. There's no way I'm paying for it. I'm doing it for Cody's birthday. Thankfully, my sister-in-law to the rescue goes, no, I have a Peacock subscription. I go, thank God. I was about to pay $4 on Apple Plus, so I'll tell you right now, I would gladly pay $72 to watch Constant Gardner again. I would not pay $4 to watch Billy Madison. Oh. Thankfully, I watched it for free, thanks to my sister-in-law. Let's talk more about Master Gardner. Again, this follows the Paul Schrader script, which at some point you start to say to yourself, is this guy making the same movie over and over or what? Or is that part of the genius in making a similar piece of work and allowing different eyes to view it? If it's a Paul Schrader film, what does that mean? It means there's a lonely, isolated character who's battling something from his past, whether it's a taxi driver, whether it's Ethan Hawke in First Reformed, a priest who's dealing with environmental destruction, whether it's Oscar Isaac in The Card Counter, who is a gambler dealing with being a former torturer of prisoners of war. You already know this character has a backstory. So Joel Edgerton may be this master botany, but clearly he's got some demons. That's what you know in a Paul Schrader movie. He's sitting there writing in his diary by himself, like, yep, this fills the classic Schrader ethos. And then Sigourney Weaver shows up. And the best way to describe this relationship is they're friends with benefits. She plays Norma Haverhill, so she's running the Gray, I guess it's called Grace Gardens. I kept wanting to call it Gray Gardens because that old documentary, but it's called, I believe, Grace Gardens. So she's running it. And why is Edgerton employed by her? We'll get to that in a second. But he's got to meet with this guy named Isai Morales. That's right. Isai Morales, who played Bob in La Bamba, love him. He shows up as Oscar Neruda, who's got his own backstory. And Sigourney Weaver tells Joel Edgerton's main character, okay, you're the master gardener. I've got my great niece coming, Quintessa Swindell. Beautiful, talented. Maya Kaur, definitely a name to watch. She's playing that character. She shows up. I want you to show her how to tend to the garden. I want you to teach her to pull out the weeds. It's a minimum wage job. She needs some living. You know, it's my sister's daughter, if I have that right. That's right. So it's my sister's daughter. And, you know, some stuff happened with my sister. You know, her husband's a piece of you know what, so just look after it for me. Okay. And then the story develops. Of course, I don't want to say too much more except to really make it clear, this guy is not just a master gardener. When you know the movie's called Master Gardener, knowing Paul Schrader, it's an allegory for something else. As he said with Taxi Driver, he goes, when I say to you Taxi Driver or Cab Driver, you think of like your buddy. You think of like your uncle's friend.
Yeah.
He's chatty, he's funny. He goes, I'm going to make it about a guy who's got serious demons and he's psychotic and he's lonely and he wants to wreak vengeance on the world. Similarly, in First Reformed, Ethan Hawke played a priest. If I tell you a priest, you say, okay, a priest is something kind, generous. No, I'm going to make him a guy who's slowly losing his mind because of environmental decay, and he lost his son in the Iraqi war. So I don't want to reveal any secrets except to say, if you like Paul Schrader, you know what you're seeing is going to slowly unpeel like an onion. And I love the script. I love his storytelling. Tiber had a funny review in which he said it's almost like a parody of a Paul Schrader movie, which I thought his review was a little bit harsh. He pointed a couple of lines which he thought were a little bit too on the nose. But I just enjoy being in that culture. I enjoy being in that environment. I just enjoy being in a theater watching a Paul Schrader movie, even when I'm paying $6.12 for Twizzlers and $15.79 for the ticket and $50 for Babysitter, because nobody's making movies like him. And he's got such confidence and assurance in his characters. You know, at some point, there's going to be some violence. You know, at some point, that central character is going to pop off a little bit. You know that he's going to reveal some secrets he shouldn't. But Joel Edgerton, definitely an actor to admire and appreciate. And again, I don't want to give away any secrets of the film, but I'm giving it 3 Maple Leafs. By the way, this film debuted at the Venice Film Festival last year. Don't believe it got a standing ovation. But it's just great to see Paul Schrader still making movies. If you like his work, you'll enjoy it. It's called Master Gardener. I'm giving it 3 Maple Leafs. Cody was busy multitasking while I was talking. Do you have any questions here about Master Gardener, about botany, about horticulture? What do you got here for me?
I would almost consider myself a master gardener, yes. Is really what I have on that. I mean, my green thumb has just gotten so green in the recent years. There's nothing better than on a Saturday morning. I have a little garden bed in my backyard. I like to go out there on a nice Saturday morning before it gets too hot, see what's what, pull some weeds. Because the key is, if you go out there every week, the weeds don't become a problem. If you don't look at it for 3 months, then all of a sudden you got these monster weeds. So I go out there, survey the land. I like, you know, I'm a man with a backyard. In Jersey, do you have like a, what's your backyard situation?
Yeah, I have a backyard. It's not particularly huge, but it's nice. But I'm like you. I'm not like you in that I don't know how to garden, but I appreciate a good garden. So the first year I didn't do much, mowing the lawn, whatever. And I was like, okay, I got to do this properly. So this guy was like, I'll put down some flower beds. I'll get the right mulch. We'll get some fertilizer. Yes. We'll kind of go, yeah, you do what you got to do. Cause I do like a good garden. I'm with you.
Are they coming out monthly to like maintain it or are you maintaining?
2 or 3 weeks, I feel like. The guy was just here today. He was putting down dry mulch, that smell of mulch. Maintaining a little bit, putting some flower beds down. I'm like, my dad's like you. My dad loves gardening.
It's something that I never saw coming, honestly. Like when I was younger, I was like, I hate this. Like my dad would make me go out and like pull weeds around my parents' house. Like when I was like, that would be like, I was not a big chores guy, but like every couple of months, my dad would be like, I need you for a few hours out here. And I'm pulling weeds and stuff. So I honestly hated it growing up. But now that I got my own place, I there's nothing better than when it looks good. You're like, yeah, that's mine.
No, I'm with you, man. And if you do like gardening, there's some moments in Master Gardener, particularly the first 10, 15 minutes, he's explaining gardening and the pruning and the shears, how seeds last for like hundreds of years and like the delicate nature of it. Again, he's using gardening as an allegory. He was like, you know, to be a gardener, you have to really have persistence in life. You have faith in your community because you feel like if I plant these things, life will turn out right. Like most gardeners are very optimistic. Like if you plant and cultivate, put in the work, then things will work out. It's a very optimistic way of life. So I love
if you plant it, it will grow.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like if you build it, he will come. This is from Anthony Land of New Yorker. It's almost as if the movie were following the blueprint of a moral scheme, like the layout of a herbaceous border. And plausibility be damned. Amazing use of herbaceous, but I feel like he's taking a shot at the movie. So screw you, Anthony. Stephanie Zakarik of Time Magazine. I like this. The less you know about Master Gardener going in, the better. That's why I didn't tell you much of the plot. I just told you the gardener stuff. The less you know about Master Gardener going in, the better. Tracing the trail of these characters' secrets is part of the thrill, but it's compelling for other reasons, too. I completely agree. Master Gardener, go check it out. Quick break. We're coming back with Anthony Ramos and Billy Madison. Well, it's a real pleasure right now to bring in Anthony Ramos. This is a terrific actor. I've enjoyed his work, whether it was in the stage, obviously, in Hamilton. I loved In the Heights, which was, of course, formerly a Lin-Manuel Miranda production. Then was a film which I thought he was terrific in. And now he's in Transformers. It's as big as it gets. He's also a big sports fan. From what I've seen, he's a Mets guy, a Jets guy, so I want to talk sports with him as well. Anthony, it's great to see you, man. How you doing?
No, it's good to see you, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
So let's talk Transformers, man. Everybody growing up, we all love Transformers. You kidding me? You name your favorite Transformer. You're always playing with all the games, the gadgets. How did this project first come about? How hyped were you?
I was hyped, man. I mean, like, you know, I'm a for real fan, you know. So when I found out that, you know, well, first when they, you know, I had the meeting with our director, Stephen Caple Jr., and it was like almost 2 hours and then they told me probably a few weeks after that I got the role. I was hyped because I've been a fan of this franchise. I've seen all the movies. I used to watch Beast Wars, the cartoon, when I was a kid. So that was one of my favorite shows. And then I found out that the Beast Wars are actually going to be in this. And I think I was the most hyped to be in a movie with Cheetor than probably with anyone I've ever worked with.
Well, that's the thing. It's I can't imagine, because obviously you're such a talented actor, there's different styles of acting, but like how much CGI is there? How challenging is that to act in front of a green screen, blue screen, whatever?
Oh, it's hard, man. I mean, it's not hard. You know what? It's like you just use your imagination. It's just like you're a kid. You know what I'm saying? You just got to, you're just imagining everything. You're like, all right, cool. If there was a 10-foot robot in front of me or a 15-foot robot and we were having this kind of conversation, would I react? You just like... And you just make it up, bro. Like it's fun, you know. It's just a lot of fun because you just like you make up the whole scene in your head. It's just you, man. They bring the tennis balls in, and then they just bring them in, and they're like, "All right, cool. Optimus's head is right here. Bumblebee's head is right there." You do like two rehearsals, and then they're like, "All right, cool. Do you remember where their heads are?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And they just take it out and you just do the scene. You're like not talking to anything or anybody, but it's fun.
No, it's funny. On The Irishman, Martin Scorsese had said, you know what? I've seen the technology and I don't think De Niro and Pesci are going to go for the tennis balls, but that's normally how you do these things. You're exactly describing what so many actors have had to do. You mentioned a few of the Transformers. Obviously, I have young kids, so they love the Transformers. Their favorite characters are Optimus Prime, Megatron, and Bumblebee. Starscream, I think, is also pretty popular. Yeah. Can you confirm or deny those Transformers are in this latest film?
I guess the movie's about to come out anyway, so it doesn't matter. I will Megatron. I'm sorry, you ain't gonna see Megatron in this one.
Okay, all right.
But and Starscream, but you'll see Bumblebee and Optimus.
Okay, Optimus Prime is definitely. I think he's the most iconic of all the Transformers. Like for me, if someone just says Transform, I think everyone knows Optimus Prime. You picture the red, the blue, you know, just that whole look. To me, I think that, you know, if you need like a Babe Ruth of Transformers, I think it's Optimus
Prime.
He is
the Babe Ruth. He is, in fact, the Babe. He MJ of Transformers, Optimus Prime, for sure.
You well, know, it's you, definitely yeah. good. Yeah, go ahead.
No, no, just you can't have a Transformers movie without Optimus. I mean, you can, but you know, I don't know what that looks like.
If Anthony Ramos could transform into anyone or anything, what would it be?
I think a plane, so that I can just fly where I want, whenever I want, you know, and you have to rush to the airport for a 7 a.m. flight, you know, yeah, exactly. Mornings, and you're like, yo, I really would like to fly later, but there are no flights. That happened to me this morning, so that's probably why it's
You look great. You look great. Trust Thank me. You. You're no worse for wear, but I know what you mean. Top on a plane is definitely something we could all appreciate. I mentioned In the Heights, man. I thought it was a phenomenal movie. I thought you did an amazing job with it. You're acting, you're singing. Again, I know it was based on Lin's original production, which I had not seen, but I thought the movie adaptation was terrific. Tell me all about that experience.
Thanks, man. It was, well, we shot in New York, shot in Washington Heights, you know, the neighborhood that the was set in. And, you know, Lin grew up there, and it was fun, man, because I'm from New York. You know, I grew up in Bushwick in Brooklyn, you know, a neighborhood that's, you know, kind of same, you know, it would, you know, be comparable to Washington Heights. And, you know, it's, and being of Puerto Rican descent, you know, from New York, like, it was big for me, man. Like we had a good time, you know, we all these songs and dancing and having this experience, you know, that I would never imagine, you know, I could have on the big screen, you know what I'm saying? And like my mom was in the movie and my sister was in the movie, and, you know, I got to dance next to my sister in the opening number. I mean, there's like 70 of us dancing in the middle of the street, you know, like the streets, you know, I used to live in Washington Heights too, man. So, It's amazing, man. Singing about how, you know, your pride for where you're from and where your family's from, and yeah, man, it was a blessing.
Yeah, it's amazing because not enough of those Latino stories are told. So it's amazing to see that kind of cast, that kind of community, and it was great to see Jimmy Smits on screen again. Tell me about working with Jimmy.
I mean, Jimmy's the man, bro. You know, like Jimmy's a thespian, bro. You know, like it was like when Jimmy was on that, you know, it felt like Jimmy's set. Like it was like, you know, it's like that's a, you know, he just got that presence, man. You know, and Jimmy is one of the first Latino actors to really, like, you know, really break into Hollywood. You know what I'm saying? Start to, you know, and he. He's just like, he's just one of those guys, man. You just like, I know it was hard for me when I started, you know, so I can't even imagine when Jimmy was first starting as an actor and, you know, breaking into the industry and just trying to get a role, you know, just trying to get any role, and then let alone like a lead role on a television show or a lead role in anything, you know, as a Latino actor, I think, you know, that, you know, so I look up to Jimmy in a big way.
I'm sure a lot of actors do. Of course, Hamilton, you know, put you on the map for a lot of common folk. Well, I think what's so amazing about it, I didn't see you in it, but of course I saw it years later with my wife. And what I was amazed at was just the originality of it and the conviction of all the performances. Like I can't imagine just the endurance to be able to perform it night after night. It seems like it's taken a lot out of you. So I'm just curious, where did you get the stamina night after night to deliver that kind of a performance?
I mean, the stamina, somebody's paying me to do it. That would be the stamina. If we was doing it for free, I mean, you know, but I think I used to tell people, like, people used to ask me that question. I'll be like, yo, there's something that I could be tired. I two auditions, three auditions in a day. And then I get to the theater and I'm like white, you know, sometimes I get there earlier than I have to be there just to take a nap, you know, mm-hmm. in the dressing room. So I just like lay down there and take a nap. But people, you know, when people ask me, I'm like, yo, I don't know. There was something that happened when the lights hit. As soon as the lights hit and I came on stage, it was like, it just gave me this burst of energy. It was like, whatever I went through that day or whatever problems I had, auditions I did or whatever fatigue I had, it just went away. It was wild, like, you know, and you know, and I felt blessed, you know, in that way, that it's just like, thank God that no matter what happened today, at least come on stage and do something that I love, actually, that I really performed this show for 1,300 people, you know, with this cast, we have another shot to do this, you know? So that's really what gave me energy.
It's a once in a lifetime experience. I'm so glad you're a part of it and you knocked it out of the park. I'm a huge sports fan, so I want to talk a little sports. I saw this quote where you're talking about some of your favorite things. New York Mets black hat. Black is my color. I've been a Mets fan since I was a kid. We couldn't afford to go to Mets games often. We did. It was so special. I still look up to all my favorite players. Al Leiter, Ray Ordonez, Robin Ventura, Edgardo Alfonso, Mike Piazza, Carlos Beltran, Carlos Delgado. I grew up watching them. Tell me about some of those Mets memories. You're too young, I think, for 2000 Subway Series, but you were there for the 2015 World Series against the Royals.
No, I watched the 2000 Subway Series. Okay. It broke my heart, bro. I watched it in this dude I used to hang out with in school named Juan in elementary school. Yo, we saw it, I think, at his house, and yeah, man. I mean, that was horrible. I didn't bet, like, wasn't Benny Agbayani on that team?
Benny Agbayani, game three was the only update. He did get the Mets to win the go ahead hit in game three.
Yeah, bro, I remember that. It was horrible. My heart was destroyed. I'm still repairing from that Subway Series. But I used to have a VHS in my mom used to have this VHS of Ray Ordonez. When Ray Ordonez, they did like a home on just him. I can't remember. I think it was called Ray-O.
Yeah.
And we used to watch it all the time. Like, Ray-O, yeah. Every time he makes some play up the middle or something, he'd do something crazy, you know. He's still one of the best, you know, defensive shortstops, I think, that ever played, like, ever. I've been a Mets fan for...
Yeah, I was about to say, if it's Ray Ordonez's highlight tape, it's probably a lot of defense, because the defense was spectacular. Whatever he did, he was like a vacuum. And whatever he sucked up was amazing.
Yeah,
and this year's Mets team, it's been a little bit up and down right now. But the thing with the Mets is, like, Steve Cohen's willing to spend. Like, you have an owner now who's like, I don't care. Like, we'll get Verlander. We'll get Scherzer. Right. We got Pete Alonso. We got Lindor. Like, you must feel this as a Mets fan. We're in the game now. Like, things may not go our way, but we're in the game now for real.
No, I definitely feel encouraged. Steve Cohen gives me so much hope. Like, as long as he's the owner, we have a chance. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's just ready. He's ready. He's like, yo, I don't care. I'm going to spend on this team. I want to win. You know, they're making improvements to the stadium. Like, even like I've been chilling with Josh, Josh Cohen, and Josh is like, yo, bro, look at this. Look at the what you call it? The Jumbotron, the scoreboard. He's like, yo, bro, we got the biggest scoreboard. Well, now it's just like shit like that, bro. You're just like, yo, this is great. Like, he's like, I'm spending on the players. We're gonna get the biggest scoreboard in the game. We're gonna improve, like, you know, even, you know, like when you're at the game, the experience you're having at the game. Like, he really, you know, him and Alex, you know, they really care, man. They care about the team. They care about winning. You know, it's as a fan, you're like, thank God, you know, like. I'm just grateful that he's got some bread to spend on this team, you know, and he's willing to spend. You know, he's like, oh, I want to win.
Speaking of willing to spend, the Jets get Aaron Rodgers. I believe you're a Jets fan as well. I mean, listen, you had a top five defense a year ago. You clearly needed a quarterback. Now you've got a multiple MVP in Aaron Rodgers. You must be out of your mind right now thinking what could happen for the Jets this year.
Yep. I'm just like, come on, Aaron. Just at least 30 touchdowns this year, bro. Come on, bro. You know, like, because he's, you know, Aaron Rodgers is he 39 now?
Yeah.
He's 39, right? So, I mean, if you ain't Tom Brady, you know, any quarterback that's 39, you're like, yo, hopefully they still got it. But Aaron Rodgers he's still the man, I think, you know, and I think that, you know, with that team and those weapons, especially, you know, Breece Hall. I think Garrett Wilson. I think that they got some weapons too on the team. So I think he's gonna really. I think that he's got a great team around him to be able to do some amazing things. And that defense, you know, that defense is still gonna dominate, you know, hopefully. So I'm really optimistic about this year, bro. And that's what we needed. We just needed a quarterback, you know. Hopefully they could keep, you know, building up Zach and you know, get him to a place where he can get in there and you know, be the quarterback that everybody hopes he can be.
Yeah, give us two great years of Aaron Rodgers. He wins you a title, and then boom, Zach Wilson can take over, and everyone's happy.
This This is just, look, come on. Perfect world, baby. In a perfect Jets world.
This is a perfect interview. Anthony Ramos is awesome. Make sure you check out Transformers, Rise of the Beasts. It's opening in theaters June 9th. I mean, $200 million budget. Dude, to me, you already are a big deal, but now you're going to be a really big deal. Now you're going to be on lunchboxes. You're going to be global empire here, Anthony Ramos. This is great for you, man. Congratulations and good luck with the movie.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thanks, Anthony. Thanks for having me, bro.
Okay, that was Anthony Ramos, and he was terrific. But also of interest is the fact that Chris Whittingham is doing this interview. Cody, as usual, shirking his responsibilities. So he said, don't worry, Whitty's going to be on. And before we did the interview, I had to double-check Whitty. I'm like, wait, you're done with Metal Arc, right? Last time I checked, you are still doing soccer stuff. He's like, yeah, 100%. So, Whitty, this is incredible. You did this pro bono, just as a favor to a friend.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm always kind of hanging around, you know, like each time that I hang around, I get to say another goodbye. So you get like the retweets and the replies of, oh, man, we miss you so much. So I like sort of have that lapping upon my shores. So Adnan, it was great working with you, pal. I'm a big listener of Cinephile. I still listen to Cinephile, even though I don't work in Metal Arc anymore. It's part of my weekly entertainment when I'm traveling over the country. You are a wonderful colleague. You're a great man. I miss you so much. Goodbye.
I miss you too, Whitty. Listen, I was so excited to come to Moss because I was going to see most of these guys. I hadn't seen them in at least 5-6 years, Cody, Dan, etc. And of course, the tragic passing of Grant Wall, you were not there. And that's why I was like, oh, I'm going to see Whitty. I was like, no, I understood why. So I totally recognize why you were not there, but it would have been great to catch up. So hopefully we will see each other at Moss. I think hopefully this year. You're still part of the family, so yeah. I anticipate you'll be there at Moss.
They're always in December, so I feel like I can make that.
I never got to really congratulate you. I loved your work. I loved your work with Samson and Skipper. I thought you were terrific moderating those two guys because it's like,
thank you.
Those are two big deals. Like, you know what I mean? Like when you have, I don't think they're egotistical, but they both got a lot to say. So Skipper's not going to get cheated, and he's the boss. And Samson's not going to get cheated. Like he's getting his word in. So I always thought you were really good at just kind of laying it up there, letting those guys go, jumping where need be. So I appreciate your skills as a host specifically.
Oh, thank you. I enjoyed getting to nerd out on that particular subject because I don't think there's anything I read more about than stuff about the sports media. It's real navel-gazing in that respect. So, that was really cool.
Well, that's the thing. I think some people think it's ridiculous. I think this is so self-absorbed. Who cares? And I said, no, listen, if you want RSN conversation, man, this is the place to come to.
Adnan, good catching up, man.
All right, Whitty, good to see you. All right, so once again, thank you to Anthony. He was awesome. And thank you to Chris Cody, who helped my Adam Sandler education. You know, I pushed Chris in this direction. I said, okay, it's your birthday, whatever you want me to watch. And I said, I've never seen the following: Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, The Waterboy, Mr. Deeds. He was like, all right, Billy Madison, done. So again, thank God my sister-in-law has a free Peacock subscription.
You didn't like it?
I got to tell you, I'm watching it. My wife likes silly comedies too. And I said, you got to watch this with me. It's for my buddy Cody. It's his birthday. And like 15 minutes in, she goes, this is so stupid. And I go, listen, I got to watch it for Chris. She goes, why don't you just tell him you saw it? I go, you know enough already. He's in class. He always just, here's the thing. There's a big issue with it. It's Adam Sandler. You have to love that man-child thing. Is she, what you doing today? What you want to do today?
It's nudity.
What do you mean? I don't want to do that to me. Like you have to find that funny when he whispers like a baby and then yells. And if you don't find it funny, you go, is he doing that again? It's the 12th time. What you doing today? Look at his shirt. Look at my little shoes. Oh, come on!
Like, stop looking at me, Swan.
Like 5 minutes in, he's like, oh, the nudie magazines are coming. Here we go again. And it's like shemale fetish. I'm like, ugh.
Women, it doesn't age. It probably doesn't age great. But
he ends up seeing a penguin dancing at one point. Here's the other part, too. The wasted cameos. Like Chris Farley. I'm like, oh, great. Chris Farley's in this. I didn't know Chris Farley was in this.
Wait,
he's a bus driver.
Wasted. Are you about to say that's a wasted scene? Dude.
He's driving the bus, and then he eats a banana, and he throws the banana peel out. And later on, of course you know what's going to happen. I thought someone would slip on the banana peel. Instead, somehow a car slips an entire banana peel and goes into the clip.
O'Doyle rules.
O'Doyle
rules. That is an iconic Chris Farley cameo. Like the
he
fact
has
that
like
you're
one good line where he's like, look at that Aish. That's like the one good thing Chris Farley knows.
That Veronica Vaughn is one piece of ace. I know from experience.
Yeah, he's in it
no,
like
no,
7 minutes.
And then he goes, no, you don't. No, I don't. But a guy I know, him and her, got it on. Dude, that is...
I wish it was as funny as your impression. It wasn't as nearly
when he's
funny.
When he's like losing with the kids, like, come on! Like when he's yelling at the kids on the
as
bus.
As I said, what is it all? It's just a guy yelling all the time. Chris Farley dancing with a penguin at the end. Like, I love Norm MacDonald, my buddy, my wife, because there's your friend. I'm like, look how skinny he is. I'm like, yeah, look how young he is. Look how alive he is. And I'm like, yeah, not much Norm MacDonald. Like, I love Norm MacDonald. It's not adding much to the films here.
You know, he really got drunk for that role. Like, well, in that opening scene.
Why don't we get the donkey drunk? He's like, why don't we put a bunch of beer in a pail?
At one point, he's like, where's Billy at? And he's like, he's at school. He's like, oh, yeah. Like, those guys just.
The only good thing is it's Pete Sampras' wife. Bridget Wilson is very attractive. Oh. It makes me realize how much I appreciate Pete Sampras. And I believe. No, it was Van Pelt said about somebody else. He might have said about Pete Sampras. Sometimes he said he hits the shot, which is a winner, and he goes, if you've seen his wife, he's a winner off the court as well. I don't think he said it about Pete Sampras, but it's funnier that way.
Did you even make it to Steve Buscemi?
Yeah, Buscemi's in there. Thank God then he shoots the guy in the ass. Good to see Brantley Whitford showing up. Classic Aaron Sorkin movies. I'm like, oh, Brantley Whitford's in the movie. Okay. But
if peeing your pants is cool, consider me Miles Davis.
Yeah, I was about to say. So there's two great lines. That's one of them, which I actually wrote down like an incredible line. Because the one kid pees his pants, Adam Sandler didn't pretense with water, and then the old lady says that. Peeing in your
pants is cool.
Great line. They consider me Miles. It's cool. They consider me Miles Davis.
Which and again, then he goes, like, lady, you're scared. Yeah. No, the sloppy Joe lady. Yeah, I got you, sloppy Joes. Lady, you're scaring us.
The Miles Davis line was great because Miles Davis, one of his best jazz albums, is called The Birth of Cool. So that was a very good line. If peeing your pants is cool, then I'm Miles Davis. Great line. The other good line is the maid who's like finding Sandler attractive as hot buns. Yeah. When he's pretending to be sick and won't go to school, she goes, well, you can help me, Stanley, and shave my armpits. He goes, I'll go right to school. That's
Where's
it.
My
I recommend
snack pack?
Two lines of the entire movie. That's it.
Miss Lippy, the kindergarten teacher, just like randomly like eating glue. During one of those montages when all the kids are outside.
Yeah, and then he starts eating glue, and afterwards she's like dancing for some reason. Two good musical selections. Ramones, Beat on the Brat, which is a great song, and of course Jackson 5 ABC. That's it. Billy Madison.
What about at the end at the decathlon when he loses and he goes on that whole spiel and the guy's like, not only do I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul. He's just like, a simple no would have done just fine.
That was bad. That wasn't bad.
That movie is like, see, I don't know what I would think if I was, you know, a 36-year-old man seeing that for the first time. But like, when I was younger, dude, that is nostalgia for me.
I figured. I go, that's Cody was probably 10 or 11 years old when he saw it. So I'm like, okay, that's like when I saw Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which I still love to this day.
Like, I'm acknowledging that. It's not, like, it's stupid, but...
Yeah, that's what I said to my wife. I go, listen, he's not selling it to me like it's The Godfather. I know what we're getting here. But I said, we both love Kingpin. We both like stupid movies, but I go, this isn't... She said to me, she goes, you know a stupid funny movie is White Chicks. She goes, that movie's really funny. I go...
That movie's good.
I go, she goes, White Chicks, tell him White Chicks is a good one. I go, all right, maybe we'll get to White Chicks his next birthday. We'll convince him on that. For now...
I want to listen... I want to go through your wife's top five, like, dumb comedies.
Yeah. Because she crushed him like that. She was like, oh, you better tell this movie sucks. She got up halfway through. She goes, this is horrible. I'm not going to sit here and watch it. Like, okay.
Well, I hate to say this, but she's wrong. She's wrong.
Most importantly, a happy birthday to my man, Chris Cody. And thank you to Anthony Ramos. And thank you to the entire crew. Thank you for supporting Cinephile. Honestly, next week's a massive episode. If I say to you a new Robert De Niro movie and the ending of Succession, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and Barry, and Natalie Eva Marie. Stunner, former WWE legend, now turned actress. It's going to be a massive episode. It's coming out after Memorial Day. I'll see you at the movies.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for occurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.